This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Habakkuk. And now here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through Habakkuk chapters 2 and 3.
You know, black hole would fit the biblical description of hell. It's a consuming fire. It's a bottomless pit. It's actually a lake of fire. It's on fire, and yet it's black. It traps its own light. The Bible refers to hell as a lake of fire and its outer darkness, apparent contradictions. And yet a black hole would actually fit both those descriptions. It's just interesting. Here Nebuchadnezzar is described as a black hole. He's never at home. He's always on the prowl. He consumes everything with which he comes in contact. His hunger for more is insatiable. Like hell, the king of Babylon is constantly enlarging his kingdom. And did you know that you are either a black hole or a shining star? Did you know that? You're one of the two. You either live for yourself, consuming everything you touch, sucking up everything for yourself, or you shine like a star, giving off light and warmth to others, shining out the glory of God. Here's the question, are you a sucker or a shiner? Verse 6 tells us, will not all these take up a proverb against him and a taunting riddle against him and say, woe to him who increases what is not his? How long? And to whom who loads himself with many pledges? Here's the first woe against Babylon. It's greed. You know, he's been increasing what is not his. How long is this going to last? Will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Will they not awaken who oppress you, and you will become their booty? The old King James Version renders the phrase, shall they not rise up suddenly that shall bite thee? You know, we still use that expression, taking a bite out of somebody. Nebuchadnezzar was pillaging the nations before him, but all he's taking will need to be paid back. One day, Babylon's creditors will take a bite out of Nebuchadnezzar. He says, because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the people shall plunder you because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city and all who dwell in it. Lust, an unbridled desire for more and more and more, eventually backfire. It's interesting how the Eskimos kill wolves. They coat the blade of their knife with layers and layers of frozen blood. And then they plant that knife down in the snow. The wolf sniffs the blood. It's attracted to the knife. And it starts to lick the blade. Well, the more the wolf tastes the blood, the stronger his thirst for it becomes. His lust for more overshadows the sting of the razor-sharp blade. The wolf ends up unable to distinguish between the blood on the knife and his own. Thus, he ends up consuming his own blood. In the morning, the wolf is found dead in the snow. And such is the legacy of any lust. An uncontrolled desire in our lives, it eventually controls you. If there's a fire burning out of control in your life, it's time to douse the blaze. Verse 9 tells us, woe to him who covets evil gain for his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of disaster. The second woe is that of gain. Nebuchadnezzar thought he could buy protection, that he could build an empire that calamity couldn't touch. And people today make the same mistake. They think enough money can shelter them from life's problems, that they can purchase peace, that they can buy some rest. Not so. Remember what Jesus said? He spoke of the deceitfulness of riches. Riches are deceitful. They never give you what they promise. Money can't buy health or happiness or holiness. A millionaire was once asked, how many dollars does it take to make you truly happy? His revealing reply, only one more. Money won't buy happiness. He says, you give shameful counsel to your house, cutting off many peoples and sin against your soul. For the stone will cry out from the wall, and the beam from the timbers will answer it. Woe to him who builds a town with bloodshed, who establishes a city by iniquity. This is the third woe against Nebuchadnezzar. It's his gore. It's the gore, the violence, the bloodthirstiness by which he spread his kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar bowled over and intimidated his opponents with brute force. He not only conquered nations, he deliberately crushed them. And God was not pleased with this king. We're told, behold, is it not of the Lord of hosts that the peoples labor to feed the fire and nations weary themselves in vain? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Ultimately, Nebuchadnezzar will be crushed. The prophet says that in the end, the earth will be filled, not with the glory of Nebuchadnezzar, but with the glory of the Lord. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to your bottle, even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. The fourth woe reveals Babylon's guile, their stealth, their deception. You see, Nebuchadnezzar was quite subversive. He got the world drunk on his promises. And then he slipped in and took advantage of those nations. He manipulated the kings into compromising positions. And this is how Satan will work with you. Before he tempts us with a sin, he twists our reasoning. He gains our trust. He deceives us into thinking that his ways are best, that he has our best interests at heart. He lures us into a bed of compromise. Beware of his schemes. The Bible calls them his wiles. Verse 16, you are filled with shame instead of glory. You also drink and be exposed as uncircumcised. The cup of the Lord's right hand will be turned against you, and utter shame will be on your glory. Remember verse 5, it spoke of Nebuchadnezzar's pride. But in the end, he's the one who will get drunk and disgrace himself. Utter shame will smother his glory, Habakkuk tells us. Reminds me of a 70-year-old actress who died in her New York City apartment. She had a box of newspaper clippings that she had taken from her career, her fame. One day she was removing the clippings. She had them up on a top shelf. And the box in which the clippings were in fell on top of her. She suffocated under her own press clippings. You might say she was pressed to death. And likewise, it was Nebuchadnezzar's boast that ensured his destruction. He died from his own pride. Habakkuk says, for the violence done to Lebanon will cover you, and the plunder of beasts which made them afraid because of men's blood, and the violence of the land and the city and of all who dwell in it. Babylon's ravaging of Lebanon will come back to haunt them. What profit is the image that its maker should carve it? The molded image, a teacher of lies, that the maker of its mold should trust in it to make mute idols. Woe to him who says to wood, awake, to silent stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet in it there is no breath at all. Here's God's final woe on the Babylonians, their gullibility. They were foolish to trust in these silly idols. Sleeping sticks, silent stones. Why create gods who are never conscious, who are unable to communicate? How gullible is it to bow to idols who have no breath at all? There's a wilderness club in the Northwest called Mountain Man Anonymous. An initiation into this club involves a dangerous stunt. Initiates have to be willing to allow a fellow member of the club to shoot a tin can off the top of their head with a bow and arrow at 100 paces. Well, a man named Anthony Roberts, he was one such candidate for membership. Sadly, though, the member missed and the arrow went right through Roberts' eye socket. Amazingly, it missed all his vital organs. Robert survived. His doctor actually commented, and I quote, he can be grateful that he has a small brain. You don't say. Well, Habakkuk is saying that anyone who rejects the overwhelming evidence for the true and living God, to follow after false gods, idols, silent stones, sleeping sticks, are you kidding? How foolish is that? These are people with a small brain. God's glory, the evidence of his existence, is splattered all around us. The earth, the heavens declare the handiwork of God. Why would you turn from the true and living God to follow after false gods, or worse, to invent your own God, or even more silly, to set yourself up as God, and yet people do it every day? These people who have small brains. Psalm 14, verse 1 tells us, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. In contrast to the breathless idols of Babylon, verse 20 declares, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Habakkuk had been up in the tower. He had climbed to the top of the wall. He had found that quiet place. He had gotten a glimpse of God's wisdom and God's glory. Do you retreat there often to get a glimpse of God's glory and be renewed in God's wisdom? It was there on top of the walls that Habakkuk realized God is faithful. The Lord's sovereignty is undiminished. Habakkuk decided to live by faith. I hope we will too. God showed Habakkuk that Babylon was just a blip on the screen of history. It was not the glory of Babylon, but the glory of God that would shine forever. Satan didn't defeat Habakkuk because he couldn't deceive him. Habakkuk knew to climb instead of jump. Chapter 3 starts. A prayer of Habakkuk the prophet on Shigionoth. Now, the meaning of this word, Shigionoth, is unclear. It also appears, though, in Psalm 7. It could have been a type of instrument. It might have been some kind of musical notation. We're really not sure. Habakkuk 3 is actually a psalm. You see, Habakkuk was not only a priest, he was not only a prophet, but he was also a musician. He was a songwriter and composer. The last verse of chapter 3 says that this psalm was to be played on stringed instruments and delivered to the chief musician to be used in the temple worship. One suggested translation for the word Shigionoth, it can mean to wander or to ramble. The phrase could imply an erratic beat or maybe a disjointed melody, which means this may have been the first hip-hop song ever written, right here, right here. Verse 2 tells us, O Lord, I have heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known in wrath, remember mercy. What a wonderful line. In wrath, Lord, remember mercy. See, Habakkuk is confessing that he was wrong. He's saying, Lord, I now get your point. I was rash. I forgot your patience is essential for salvation. I was looking through the lens of wrath and judgment and malice, but in the tower, I was able to look through your lens of mercy. Lord, in wrath, remember mercy. In Judaism, there is a legend told about Abraham. One day, he found a fellow traveler on the road. He invited the man into his tent and he prepared for him a meal. When the man went to eat the meal, he failed to give thanks to God. Abraham questioned him. He replied, well, I worship only fire and I reverence no other God. Abraham became incensed. He threw the man out of his tent. God called to his friend Abraham and asked him what he had done. Abraham replied, Lord, I forced him out because he didn't worship you. God answered him, I have tolerated this man for 80 years, although he dishonors me. Could you not have endured him for one night? See, Habakkuk realizes now that God is patient. Not because he's powerless, but because he really does want to pardon and forgive us. But there's even more here to Habakkuk's statement. He's also saying, Lord, I'm not totally sure of your work or your timing, but I trust that you are wise and that you are wonderful. Habakkuk has learned that the just walk not by sight, or by smarts or by sensation, but by faith. It's not what we see. It's not what we can figure out. It's not what we feel, but we live by faith. Habakkuk is proof that time in the tower with God changes a person's perspective. If you have a hard time understanding God's ways and accepting His will, perhaps you need to be alone with God on top of the walls. It's in God's presence that a feeble faith can grow strong. Habakkuk writes in verse 3, God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. Selah, His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of His praise. This word Selah is another musical notation. It means to pause and think it through. Whenever you see that word Selah, it's calling on you to pause and think about it. It was at the Selah that the musicians played their instrumental interlude. It's where the music kept playing. The lyrics stopped, but the music kept playing. This is probably where the lead guitar player got in a few licks. Every time you see Selah, you should stop and reconsider the previous thought. Mull it over again in your mind. Now, some Bible scholars take this next section from verse 3 through verse 16 to be historic. It speaks of the Lord at the Exodus, meeting Israel in Teman or Edom and bringing them up through the wilderness into the land of Canaan. But other Bible scholars treat these verses as prophetic. You remember Isaiah 63 describes Jesus' second coming, and it reveals that the Lord will come up from Bozra or Teman wearing blood-stained robes. Perhaps you remember that when we went through Isaiah. That He's going to execute judgment on the armies of the world while defending the Jews who take refuge at Petra. So which is it here? Historic or is it prophetic? Well, I believe it's both. In this psalm, God wants Habakkuk and the Jews to realize that just as God has delivered them in the past, He will also deliver them in the future. And you know, it's by focusing on God's past work and putting our faith in God's future work that we can find peace in the present and that we can trust Him today. Now, verse 4 tells us, His brightness was like the light. He had rays flashing from His hand, and there His power was hidden. Before Him went pestilence, and fever followed at His feet. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and startled the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills bowed. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, the curtains of the land of Midian trembled. Here Habakkuk speaks of Egypt's neighbors and the fear they showed at the sight of God's power. He's probably referencing here God's shaking of Mount Sinai. Remember when God's presence descended upon Mount Sinai, the mountain literally quaked. God had lightning in His hand, as He says here. He also mentions the plagues upon Egypt. The Exodus startled the nations. Verse 8. O Lord, were You displeased with the rivers? Was Your anger against the rivers? Was Your wrath against the sea that You rode on Your horses, Your chariots of salvation? Your bow was made quite ready. Oaths were sworn over Your arrows. Selah, You divided the earth with rivers. You remember God divided both the Red Sea at the Exodus and He divided the Jordan River when the children of Israel were brought into the Promised Land. And God will divide the rivers and shake the mountains again. He'll do both when He judges this earth in the last days, just prior to Jesus' return during those 7 years of what we call Great Tribulation. He says, the mountains saw You and trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered its voice and lifted its hands on high. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation at the light of Your arrows. They went at the shining of Your glittering spear. You remember the story of Joshua at the Battle of Beth Horon. The sun and moon stood still. God worked a cosmic miracle. You remember the story. General Joshua, he prayed for more daylight so that he could completely vanquish his enemy. And God calls the sun to stand still on its march across the horizon. The extra time and the hailstones that accompanied it from heaven won the victory. It was an amazing miracle, a cosmic miracle. And the book of Revelation teaches us that in the last days, God will again work these kinds of catastrophic miracles. He'll literally rock this earth with his celestial judgments. Verse 12, you marched through the land in indignation. You trampled the nations in anger. Now, when did God himself march through the land to do battle? Or is this just metaphorical, poetical language? Well, I believe Habakkuk is speaking quite literally. You know, we often say that Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. But did he? You remember the story? Joshua had some help. On the night before the battle, the captain of the Lord's army appeared to Joshua and basically usurped his authority. He took over the command. In fact, the next day, Joshua followed the captain of the Lord's orders. I believe, and the scripture bears witness, that this captain was actually a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. It was Jesus who marched with the troops around Jericho and won the battle that day. In fact, he marched through the land. He was the mastermind behind the conquest of Canaan. Habakkuk continues, you went forth for the salvation of your people, for salvation with your anointed. You struck the head from the house of the wicked by laying bare from foundation to neck, Selah. You know, it's interesting. Jesus not only won the first battle in Canaan at Jericho, he will win the final battle staged at Armageddon. Habakkuk says, you're anointed. It's literally, your Messiah will go out to win salvation for his people. In the final fight, Jesus will once and for all strike the head of the house of the wicked. He will defeat Satan once and for all. Remember the ancient promise given to the serpent in the Garden of Eden? Genesis 3 verse 15 says, I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head and you shall bruise his heel. It was the seed of the woman. That was the Messiah. The seed of the serpent is the Antichrist. The cross was Jesus' heel bruise. But it's at his second coming that our Messiah will crush the serpent's head and defeat the Antichrist and his armies. And notice the strategically placed Selah. Here's something you need to pause and think about. Here's something you really need to mull over and consider, especially if tonight you're under the gun, or if your back's against the wall, or if there's two strikes against you, or if you're down for the count, or if you're not sure you can get back up on your feet. Here's something you need to pause and you need to consider. Think of the victory that Jesus won at the cross. Think of the victory he'll win in the end. When Jesus returns, he'll defeat the house of the wicked by cutting off its head. That means that no matter what you're currently facing, Jesus can help you overcome it. He won at the cross. He'll win in the end. That means he's faithful in the present. The just shall live by his faith. Verse 14. You thrust through with his own arrows the head of his villages. They came out like a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was like feasting on the poor in secret. You walked through the sea with your horses, through the heap of great waters. When I heard, my body trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered my bones, and I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with his troops.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.